Frank Muir goes into radio and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marks.
A friend of mine has a little boy who's always listening to disc jockey programs, and the other night my friend was passing his son's bedroom and he heard the little fellow saying his prayers. And it said, God bless Mummy and Daddy. And this request also goes out to Auntie Edith, who lives in Cleveland, Uncle Fred, Cousin Maureen, not forgetting the dog Bonzo. Two men were sitting, waiting to have interviews for a job as a radio announcer, and one said to the other, have you done much of this sort of work before? The other said, no, I ain't, no, don't go to this all right, no, first time I've been out with this sort of job, you know. A week later, they met in the street. The first fellow said, did you get the job? No, I said I was too tall. I've got one of these new miniature Japanese radios. It's the size of a pinhead. It's got 5-wave bands, VHF, stereo, cassette recorder, perfect reproduction. The only trouble is I can't find it. You know, people are a menace with their transistor radios, aren't they? I mean, wherever you go in the country, on the beach, radio's blaring away. It's terrible. I can hardly hear myself playing the bagpipes. When I was young, we didn't have these modern transistor radios. I used to listen on a cat's whisker. Got a lot of interference, though. It used to keep purring. There was a girl who used to live down our road. We called her Radio Sal. Whatever the frequency, you were guaranteed good reception. An interviewer for a BBC radio program was sent to interview a Roman Catholic priest and found that he'd arrived at the time confessions were being heard. He thought it'd be rather a good atmospheric touch if he did the interview through the confessional grill. So he queued up behind all the penitents, and when they'd gone, he went up the grill and said, may I speak to you for a moment, Father? I work for the BBC. And the priest said, oh, my son, I'm glad you've come to see me. It must take courage to make a confession like that.
This program is what they call in criminal circles an inside job. Radio on the subject of radio. Having looked outward so many times, we're now turning our attention inward to our own medium. The development of radio really put an end to the idea of silence. With the invention of radio, everyone had the opportunity to be surrounded by instant noise, and many took advantage of it. In the words of Giro Chester and Garnet R. Garrison,
through the medium of broadcasting, we've been conditioned to a steady stream of words and music during our working day. Radio provides a background for our study, conversation, cooking, eating, traveling, and even our thinking.
Well, that's progress. Here's Will Rogers on the subject.
Of course, we don't get meat as often as our forefathers, but we do have our peanut butter and radio.
And a definition from Peter Lind Hayes.
Radio is the manly art of shouting brave words into a defenseless microphone.
That's a fairly basic idea of the medium. Other people have seen more in the relationship between broadcaster and public. Here's the view of Michael Cousteau, published in the Radio Times.
Let us come to the next flashpoint, sex. Now, I'd like to put the proposition to you that being a single person in a room with a radio set is like being in bed with someone. It's essentially an erotic situation.
Well, if turning on the radio turns him on. The main point, I suppose, is the old cliche about radio being the medium of the imagination.
You could do things on radio, see, that you couldn't possibly do on television. My sound effects man and I will give you a demonstration right now.
Okay,
people, now, when I give you the cue, I want the 500-foot mountain of whipped cream to be shoved into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will appear overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream to the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. You the maraschino cherry. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras. Now, you want to try that on television?
I see what you mean.
That was Dan Freeberg with a piece rather poignantly entitled Anyone Here Remember Radio? One of the problems of listening to the radio is the purely technical one of hearing it. Though technology has improved enormously, you can still get a rather gravel path sort of reception on a cheap tranny. And some, even of the older radio sets, are distinctly temperamental. Here's James Thurber on the subject.
I've never had a portable radio that worked very well for me. I say for me because other people can often make my radio go when I can't. I have what some of my friends call a dead thumb. When I apply it to the knob of a radio set, there's a curious mechanical resistance. The box either goes completely dead or gives a high whiny sound like squeal, or it says thunk, 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 and then stops. Now and then I get a few bars of disconsolate banjo music from some imaginary station, but that's all. One smart-looking portable I bought in Hollywood 10 years ago played all right for a week and then began to go spreak and orp when I clicked the knob. I found out after wrestling with it, it would work properly on its back on the floor. That is, it would work properly on its back for a week. Then it would only go if it were set on something higher than my head. Now, such a place is hard to find in the average or normal house. A housewife objects to a radio that has to be set on the mantelpiece or hung from the ceiling or placed on a step halfway up the front stairs. In the end, the thing would only play if I held it in my hand. This is an uncomfortable way to listen to a concert or a ball game. Your wrist gets numb.
Like all technologies, radio has its own peculiar language. There are certain jargon words which are used around the studio, a sort of shorthand readily understood by people working in the medium. Like all jargon, it changes and is soon outdated. Here are some very strange examples taken from a 1932 American glossary of radio studio terms. First, belcher.
One with a frog in his throat.
Woof.
A word used frequently in making tests but having no meaning.
Etheritis.
Hardening of the eardrums due to too much listening to ether waves.
Announcerebral obesity.
Fat-headedness. Apply to announcers.
I must say, none of those used with any great frequency in the studios Alfred and I work in. We tend to talk in simpler terms of things like panel games.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of What Do You... A new radio quiz game loosely based on all the old radio quiz games. The rules are very simple. We shall ask a team of two personalities, Lord Elphus...
Hello.
...and the Deaconess of Detroit...
Hello.
...a series of questions in either category, or special category. If they get it right, they get a... And if they get a wrong answer, they get a... from the studio audience. At the end of the contest, they will hear this... and they must stop immediately. At any point in the proceedings, they may be given a... which means they can ask for another question, or if they hear a... it's the fire alarm. When they want to interrupt a... or a... but not a... question, they must press their special buttons. Lord Elphus, will you press yours? And Deaconess yours. If they get it right, they get 15 points on the scoreboard here, 4 letters on the radio blackboard for each correct part, and a shot from our mystery gunner. Like so. In the event of a tie, I shall start the clock. So, and there will be a choice of either a... or a... for the first of either the contestant or the contestant who can make the golden word Birmingham from his 4 letters. And he will get a, which will mean he's this week's winner. Right, well, those very simply are the rules. We'll be back again same time next week. Till then, goodbye from Lord Elphus, the Deaconess of Detroit, and from me it's...
Eric Idle. In radio, the broadcaster does his best to talk directly to his audience, and this one-to-one relationship means that the listeners get very interested in the lives of the presenters they hear. You may remember the very old song about little Betty Bouncer who loved an announcer down at the BBC. Well, the interest doesn't always go that far, but it used to be very strong, so much so that capital could be made of it. Here's a report from a wartime Sunday Express.
A BBC announcer will stand on his head reading a news bulletin in the Home Service program on March the 8th and on March the 10th for the forces. This is part of the Puzzle Corner prize competition, and listeners will be asked to guess which of 3 announcers he is.
I bet there's a snag somewhere. Like there's nowadays personality cults in radio centre on disc jockeys rather than announcers, newsreaders. So much airtime is taken up with popular music, and so many people listen to it, that this is hardly surprising. Here's a rather dismissive view of that style of broadcasting from Harry V. Wade.
The ideal voice for radio may be defined as having no substance, no sex, no owner, and a message of importance to every housewife.
Disc jockey shows build up enormous followings of idolaters, but people who don't like them tend to be equally strong in their dislike. There's the music, for a start. Here's an anonymous quip on that subject.
Every time we hear a disc jockey play the top 40 tunes, we get the shakes, thinking what the bottom 40 must sound like.
And then, for some people, the disc jockeys themselves, with their eternal bonhomie, can be a little depressing. Here's an anguished address to one from Wilson Misner.
If you don't get off the air, I'll stop breathing it.
But for the young, a disc jockey is an idol and a friend, and a lot of young people never go anywhere without their faithful transistor set.
My baby's got a transistor radio. She takes it everywhere we go. She takes it when we go out a walking, even to a movie show. Went out just last night in the pale moonlight. I asked her for a kiss, but instead of hearing her whisper sweet words of love, all that I could hear was this. To the house where my baby lived to ask her for a date. Oh, there I was, walking up the garden path around about a half past eight. When I heard a sound, made my poor heart pound. It stopped me in my stride. I seemed to hear the voice of another guy coming from inside.
I wonder if you're lonesome tonight. But no one to call. Maybe that's because you're 11 feet tall. But all the world's a stage, they say. I've often heard that said. But I don't have a wooden heart. I have a wooden head.
I'd like to take a transistor radio and throw it in the deep blue sea. I'm so jealous of a transistor radio, cause it takes her mind off me. I said, oh baby, please be mine. I want you for my own. Tell me, is your love for somebody else, or is it for me alone?
It's also for Nagaya Guki of British Honduras, Mbongo Appledorian of New Guinea, and Fred Glockenlocker of British West Hartlepool.
I swore to her that I would be always true and love her all the while. And on that oh so happy day in May, I took her down the aisle. Now do you take this man to be your loving husband? The preacher softly said. But he never heard you say I do, cause this is what he heard instead. Told me you were just 18 on the telephone. I thought that you meant 18 years, but you meant 18 stone. Big Bad Mama. We went to spend our honeymoon down on the island of Capri. I found ourselves a very small hotel, as quiet as could be. But when I got up to our room upon our wedding night, this is the sound that reached my ears as I switched out the light.
Darling.
Here. Where's the radio?
Music he wants.
Benny Hill. Listening to the same radio program as a lot of other people can give a sense of community. In the early days, listeners really entered into the spirit of the thing. Here's part of a letter published in the Sunday Chronicle in the 40s.
I wonder how many answer the BBC speaker's hearty good morning to you all. I do. I say good morning to you and to dear old home and to my beloved king and queen.
It's nice. It's nice that radio's taken so personally. but this can lead to problems. Here's news from the Daily Mail in the 50s.
Miss Blank, 28-year-old domestic servant, threw a brick through a window at Broadcasting House and told the police, I felt the BBC wanted livening up a bit. We've been having some lousy programmes lately.
Might open up a whole new style of audience research, counting the broken windows in Broadcasting House. In commercial radio, audience research becomes market research. I wonder what form it takes in Russia.
At the third stroke of the hammer on the sickle, the time was exactly 11 a.m. Moscow Standard Time, which is precisely 2 a.m. American Standard Time, proving once again that the glorious Soviet republics are hard at work while the filthy decadent democracies are still fast asleep. This program comes to you by courtesy of the makers of Soviet Krispies, the workers' breakfast food. Just pour the Soviet Krispies onto your plate, add milk, and listen to the cheerful... And now for Comrade Housewife's Choice. And here is our first request from Comrade Natasha Belyenkova, a typical Russian housewife, mother of 73 children, heir of the Soviet Union, and a spare-time crane driver. And she would like to hear the Moscow State Philharmonic Traditional Jazz Band playing a tune written by Comrade Hoggy Carmichael and dedicated to one of our greatest Soviet Republic states, Georgia. Unfortunately, we have not got this recording here, so here we have a traditional Russian patriotic song by the famous Russian composer, Comrade Dr. Thomas Arne. Now, here is a special announcement of interest to our little comrades. For 1 week only, the Soviet Krispy Company is giving away absolutely free to the children of Russia genuine junior secret police rubber truncheon. Yours, comrade kiddies, for only 2 box tops of Soviet Krispies and the name and address of 2 suspicious relatives. Now, back to Moscow and the newsroom for tomorrow's news.
Michael Benteen, any of us who work in broadcasting know how easy it is to make mistakes. It's hard enough to keep the words in the right order when reading from a script, but in ad-lib speaking, the opportunities for error are even greater. So if you ever laugh at an announcer's gaffe, spare a thought for the poor fellow. Remember how easy it is to get something wrong. The trouble with these stories of broadcast errors is unless you've actually heard them, you can't be sure whether they're genuine or whether they're the product of wouldn't it be terrible if old somebody... That's for the conversation. With that proviso, let's hear now a few broadcast blunders. First, from a very new announcer.
It is 10 o'clock Greenwich. Meantime, here is the news.
From a weather forecast.
And tonight, northern areas can expect incessant rain. I'm sorry, incessant rain.
From a cricket commentary.
Here's Miller running into bowl. He's got 2 short legs and 1 behind.
I'm not sure that imitation is an actionable, Alfred. From another sports reporter.
And now, over the hearse racing at Horst Park.
There are many more around in the mythology of radio. Unfortunately, the best ones are unprintable. But let's just hear something which is reputed to have been printed in the Radio Times.
9:30, the life of Horatio Nelson. For details, see top of column.
I think before we drop into error ourselves, we should move on and consider that popular and influential area of broadcasting, children's programs.
Hello, children. Here is your music for today. Well, you know what to do, children. Here is your music for running out of the kitchen. Off you go into the lounge, right up to Mummy. Has she got her back to you? Then out with your Robin Hood sword and plunge it into Mummy's back. With a 1, 2, 3, here is your stabbing music. no lathing. Just jump over, Mummy, because it's time for our good deed. Saving Grandpa the bother of chopping the firewood. Have you got your little hatchets ready? Good. And here is Uncle Rotter to sing for you.
Sharpen the hatchet and run up the stairs, hide beneath the bed down. One, two, diddly do, and off with Grandpa's head down.
There, now never mind the mess, because it was such fun, wasn't it? And now, off to find Grandma. There she is, hanging from a beam in the kitchen. Oh, I forgot. We showed her our Roy Rogers lasso yesterday, didn't we? Never mind. Give her a push, and we...
Swing away to the Grandma Wolf's with a 1-2-3, 1-2-3.
But wait! Oh, here comes Daddy up the front path. Wouldn't it be lovely to have two daddies? Well, we can arrange that. Got your little exercise hatchets? Then it's...
Up on the chair behind the door. Hey, diddle-diddle. Here comes Papa, so up with your trotter and split him down the middle.
Now, children, just one last exercise. Take Daddy's keys out of his pocket. Run to his desk. Take out all his money, his bank books, and those stupid old stocks and shares. And hurry along to the Auntie Rotter Home for Orphans, Balls Pond Road, London. Bye-bye, children.
Ta-da, children.
Peter Sellers. Of course, a program like that would never be broadcast. Standards have to be maintained. It's a strange fact, but true, that the public expects much higher moral standards from radio than it does from television. Perhaps it's because radio is the older medium. It's expected to stand for good old-fashioned values, and people are very shocked when they detect any falling short in broadcast material. The treatment of royalty is a particularly sensitive area. A report from the News Chronicle in the 40s.
Colonel Blank, the publisher, heard last night's 20 questions and later said he was so disgusted with an object chosen, Queen Mary's umbrella, that he was returning an order for books sent to his firm by the BBC.
Quite right, too. The broadcasting of drama can also lead to embarrassment. A letter sent to the News Chronicle.
My wife and I are not prudes, but we avoid each other's eyes and switch off in 9 cases out of 10 when plays are being broadcast.
And of course, when religion is on the radio, you're dealing with dynamite. Thank goodness that most of the listeners at least retain a proper attitude to the subject. A suitable letter from Ravelli.
My goldfish is religious. He stays still as a stone in a reverent attitude while the service is on the radio on Sundays. Then, when Family Favourites comes on, he darts about gaily.
Quite right. You're absolutely correct. Broadcasting standards must be maintained. And some people think that listeners' councils should be formed with the power to control what is broadcast.
Well, it's great to be with you tonight. We have a...
Pardon me, Mr. Freeburg, but my name is Tweedley.
Well, we all have our problems.
I am the censor from the Citizens Radio Committee, and I feel...
You, from the Citizens Radio Committee, you say?
That's exactly what I said, yes.
And what is your purpose in being here?
I must okay all the material used on your program here, and I think the best method is to just sit back here and interrupt when I feel it's necessary.
You mean you plan to stop me every time I do something that you think is wrong?
Exactly. I'll just sound my little horn like this. And then you stop, and I'll tell you what's wrong.
Somehow I can tell this is going to be one of those days.
You just go right ahead, Mr. Freeburg. Don't mind me.
Yeah, now I'd like to sing...
You forgot to say thank you, Mr. Freeburg. Politeness is an essential in radio programming. Your program goes into the home. We must be a good influence on children.
And that's a darling little horn there. Thanks very much, Mr. Tweedley.
You're welcome, I'm sure.
I'd like to sing a old river song in honor this week of National Mississippi Riverboat Paddle Wheel Week. Mr. May, if you please.
Very polite, Mr. Freeburg.
Thank you.
Old Man River, that old...
All right, Tweedley, politeness I dig, but what in the world is wrong with Old Man River?
The word old has a connotation some of the more elderly people find distasteful. I would suggest you make the substitution, please.
I suppose you insist?
Precisely. You may continue.
Okay, music.
You forgot to say thank you.
Yes, okay. Thank you, Mr. Tweedley.
You're quite welcome, I am sure.
Elderly Man River, that Elderly Man River, he must know something, but he don't say nothing.
All right, hold it, fellas. Now what, Tweedley?
The word something, you left off the G.
But that's authentic. Something. Something. That's the way the people...
I'm sorry.
...talk down there.
The home is a classroom, Mr. Freeburg.
I know you said that.
Keep in mind the tiny tots. And furthermore, think back. You'll recall that you said, but he don't say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, really, Mr. Freeburg, that's a double negative. Do you mean he does say something?
No, I just wasn't using my head, I guess.
I mean, after all, it should be grammatically correct, keeping in mind...
the tiny tots, yes.
You probably mean he doesn't say anything.
I suppose I mean that, yes, I guess. All right, fine. You win. All right, Billy, music. Thank you.
You're welcome, I'm sure.
Elderly Man River, that Elderly Man River, he must know something, but he doesn't say anything. He just keeps rolling. He just keeps rolling along. He doesn't plant taters, potatoes. He doesn't plant cotton cutting. And then those that plant them are soon forgotting. But Elderly Man River,
excellent.
Thank you.
You and me.
The tiny tots again, was it?
Exactly.
Sorry about that. Here we go. We got by that one.
Open bars! Lift the field!
You can't Okay, take your finger off the button, Mr. Tweedley. We know when we're licked. Well, that concludes Elderly Man River. Oh, yes, and thank you for being with us, Mr. Tweedley.
You're welcome, I'm sure.
Stan Freeburg in the grip of a listener's counsel. And that's almost the end of our program on radio. But just before we go, let's hear an epitaph on a disc jockey.
Now death has come and death has done what many wished they could. He had a request from everyone to switch me off for good.
And that's it. We'll now leave the airwaves and return next week with a program on poetry. Until then, goodbye.
Children everywhere.
Frank Muir Goes Into Radio was produced by Simon Brett and John Davis.